for me, it's like this whole idea, it's become kind of a common thing when you listen and read, but like this idea of us sharing our stories with each other. I think that's really what it's all about at the end of the day. I was in St. Lucia talking to, like, I don't know, 25 kids at the juvenile detention center on this island. And I was telling them stories about my past and where I'm from. And one of the kids stopped me and he said, "Oh, coach, man, you're just like us." And I was like, "Yeah, exactly. That's the point. We're all just like us. We're all just like each other. You know what I mean? We all have a story. We all have a past. We try and pretend and armor up and pretend like we don't. But the reality is that we all do. And then when people are willing to be vulnerable enough to share some of those things, and look, not everybody deserves the right to hear every deepest and darkest secret of mine, right? But if I am willing to share some things with people and show the humanity that I have, they're willing to share back, we understand each other better. We get along better. That's just the bottom line.
You were just listening to Mike Avery, who is currently the head coach for Fort Wayne FC in Indiana. He was formerly the head soccer coach at Valparaiso University, and he's become a good friend of myself and Nate's and our work with Equilibria in Sports. And we're excited today to have him on the podcast to talk about his unique approach at developing his team's culture by embracing the cultural diversity of his team. And so often as coaches, we see that cultural diversity as a challenge. And Mike has an incredible story for us today and some really good strategies and ways that we can actually turn that challenge into a game-changing opportunity for our team's culture. You're listening to the Coaching Culture Podcast. I'm JP Nurbin alongside my co-host Nate Sanderson. Every week in around 30 minutes, we're giving you strategies and tools for you to grow as a leader and build your culture. We know the reason why most teams struggle, and that is because they have a dysfunctional culture. This leaves coaches frustrated with entitled players, losing seasons, and toxic environments. And at Thrive on Challenge, we believe that the silver bullet is a transformational culture. We help coaches to create and sustain transformational cultures so they can strengthen relationships, raise standards, and inspire others to make an impact. To learn more about our workshops, retreats, and mentorship program, go to thriveonchallenge.com. You can also get the coaching notes PDFs for every Coaching Culture episode by subscribing to our weekly newsletter. You're listening to episode 133, Building Community in the Locker Room, with professional soccer coach Mike Avery. Now, this guest episode with Mike Avery is actually really timely because of some of the things that we're going to be offering our listeners and followers in the upcoming week. I met Mike Avery in Portland at an Equilibrium Sports Train the Trainer, where we were being trained up in delivering a self and team awareness workshop from Equilibria and learning more about how to use Equilibria in sports. And if you hadn't already, you should go back and listen to episode 120 and 121 with the vice president of Equilibrium Sports, Lynn Kaczmarek. Equilibria is something that Nate and I both are big believers in, and we are going to be using with so many teams moving forward, because it's not just powerful in bringing around self and team awareness, but it's a powerful tool that equips your players and your coaching staff and yourself with a personal intervention so that we can move from personality to character. And it is going to be a game changer for how we build our cultures moving forward. Now, I'm mentioning this because not only were Mike and I just validated last week, but I'm offering a bit of a teaser webinar on how we can improve our team culture by embracing and leveraging diverse personalities. And I'll be sharing some of the stuff that I've already learned with Equilibria, and that will be offered this week. There will be a link in the episode details for you to register there. But also, on Thursday, April 9th, the Vice President of Equilibrium Sports, Lynn Kaczmarek, will be offering an Introduction to Equilibria in Sports webinar. It's 90 minutes. She's offering two of them that day. There will be a link as well in the episode details of the podcast. Both of these webinars, they are free. They are 100% free. They just require you to go in there, register, and make sure, you, if you haven't already, to take that personality diversity indicator. I'm telling you, you do not want to miss this. It's 100% free, and it's going to be a game changer for your culture. Now, let's get into our conversation with Mike Avery. Mike, it's great to have you on the podcast. It was awesome meeting you out in Portland. And as soon as I heard your story from your coaching time at Valparaiso University, I knew this was a story we'd have to share with our listeners. So why don't you take us back to the start of kind of, you know, when you started as head coach at Valpo, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Yeah. Thanks for having me on, first of all. But I was hired in, I think it was 2007 at Valparaiso University, Division I program in Northwest Indiana, just outside of Chicago. When I took the job, the program wasn't in a great spot, in truth. And so as I started to work and I was excited and got recruiting and, you know, we're 45 minutes from downtown Chicago, which has some of the best club soccer in all of the country. And I'm calling all the top clubs. I coached at Notre Dame. I coached at Louisville. I knew all these coaches. I had all these contacts. But the reality is that the kids just weren't calling us back. You know, we weren't quite good enough yet to attract the kind of player we needed to be competitive at the level that we wanted to be playing. And so I started to take some different routes in recruiting and go outside the box a little bit. And I started to tap into some international connections that I had. I recruited heavily in the Caribbean. So we had Jamaican players. We ended up with a player from the Cayman Islands, players from Puerto Rico, South America, Mexico, Europe, all over the place, Africa. And then pretty soon you turned around and you're maybe 5 or 6 years into this process and you look around the locker room and you realize one day, look, we've got 30 guys on the team and there's 15 different birth countries in our locker room. I think probably 70 or 80% of the locker room would have checked a box other than white if they were filling out a job application. We just became a very, very multicultural, diverse, colorful, however you want to describe it, our locker room just became that. And almost without even knowing it, you know, you just turn around because you're in it every day. But when you step back and look at it, it was a pretty impressive group. So then, you know, we started to work and keep going and it started to build on itself. And you know, it's funny, I would stand across from the other coach before a game, pregame. And so when you're talking to him, just greeting him as the teams are warming up behind each other, and I would look across at their team and he would kind of look across at our team as we're exchanging pleasantries. And he would always kind of take a look and then lean out and take a hard look and lean out and take a harder look. And then he would say, wow, your team's athletic, I guess would be the word that they would usually come up with. And it started to dawn on us, like we did look physically quite different than other teams did. You know, a predominantly black team in college soccer, Division I college soccer in America was a unique thing, right? So we were playing a game down in Florida. The opponent doesn't matter necessarily. And we started on the day with 9 out of 11 players were black in our team. And so as in the course of the game, one of our players, Yannick Uwunze, Yannick was born in Nigeria, grew up in France, immigrated to the United States at about 13 years old, went to junior college in Kansas and ended up in Valparaiso, Indiana. He's an interesting character, pretty diverse lifestyle, life experiences. So he's yelling at a teammate in the field and doesn't get a response from his teammate. I think we're defending a corner kick. And he yells something again and doesn't get a response. Now in soccer, almost every team speaks a little bit of Spanish in soccer. And so he yells back to his teammate again, and this time he yells it in Spanish. And the teammate turns around immediately. And an opponent on the other team looked up at him and said, "Oh man, you speak Spanish." And Yannick said, "Yeah, I mean, I speak 7 languages, actually, you know." And the guy said, "Wow, that's pretty good for a monkey." And it was on from that moment in time. And, you know, the guy got the response that he was looking for from Yannick. All of the players on our team heard it. Everybody got angry. And this kid ran around the game and started using that word over and over and over again to get this kind of response. You know, when you're coaching from the sideline, you can see something's going on, but you can't always hear exactly what's going on. And so when halftime finally came, the players came over to me and shared with me what was going on. You can tell they're visibly very agitated, very, very excited. And I didn't handle it very well. I'm not going to lie to you guys. You know, it was not my proudest moment as a coach. I freaked out. I ran to the referees, to the other team's coach, to the athletic director of the other school that was there. you know, the backstory for me also is not only was I the coach of this team that had all of these kids that I loved, like my own on the team, I do have a black son at home. I had just adopted 2 weeks prior to that game, my son KJ, who came from the Democratic Republic of Congo. So we welcomed a four-year-old black child into our home. I'm coaching these teams, and then I hear this word. It was a really heavy day. We were trying to get out of the game. I told him, I'm not going to play. We're not going to put our kids in this kind of harmful, hurtful situation. We're not going to play. And you get all the assurances. No, coach, we've got it under control. We're sorry. We'll take care of it. It won't happen again. We did travel a long way. Players want to play. We talked to the team. Everybody wants to play. And so we went back out on the field. And of course, within 5 minutes, here comes the word again. And then this time, another player, a little Liberian kid that we had on our team, decided to take matters into his own hands, and he solved it with a punch, right? So the irony in that situation becomes that we are now the bad guys. We're dealing with a red card, 2-game suspension for fighting. I'm going to have to call the league office and tell them why we got a red card for fighting. All these things. We are now the people that are in trouble, all because someone else was offending us in that way. We get back to the hotel and things are finally calmed down, and it was a really good teachable moment for me as a coach. And so, you know, we started to talk about, like, look, we do look different, you know, as a group. We are a little bit out of the norm. We can't respond violently. We all agreed on that. That can't be our response. So how are we going to handle it when we feel offended, or when someone calls us out on these things, or whatever it is? How are we going to handle it as a group? You know, you play the game of soccer. Soccer is about solving challenges in positive ways. That's how we tried to approach it. And we just kind of left it there at a conversation. From that time in Florida, we grew a little bit as a group and grew together a little bit as a group. We kept playing. We're up in Michigan a couple months later. And I've been coaching at this point maybe 25 years in college and never had one incident in all of these years. And then now in the season, we have two. So up in a different game, a different player, a different slur. But it happens again. Fortunately, we had learned from the first time when we didn't fight in the second time, but it still was an ugly incident. So we get back to our locker room the next day and we're talking about it again. And you know, obviously something's knocking on the door for our team. And so the question was, you know, how do we want to handle this when people are pointing out that we do look a little bit different? We can be, you know, it's an opportunity for us, really, is how we viewed it. And the guy started at that point to share with me some things that I just didn't know. You know, they started to talk about how, you know, coach, it's not only when we play and it's not just when we're on the road. It's not so easy for us here on campus sometimes, too. And to be honest with you, I was shocked. I mean, you get into this little bubble with your team where I come into the office in the morning and I meet them in the locker room and we go on the field, but I'm not with them all day across campus in different ways. And so when they started to tell me things, ways that they were made to feel different on campus, it really kind of caught me by surprise and disappointed me, but it caught me by surprise. Things like when they would go to the store in town, they would get extra security that would take them through the store. Or things like being turned into the honor council for cheating when they didn't cheat. You know, I had 4 players almost every semester get accused of cheating. All 4 black, all 4 international, all 4 English as a second language, all 4 found not guilty when they went through the process. Happened every semester. Hurtful, you know, even in very small ways. They would go to the dining hall and, you know, a few sorority girls would be in front of them in line and just pass through. And then the lady would stop them and very politely say, now, are you sure you guys have enough money for that today? You know, just things like that, small ways. And then the one example I always use is that when anything would happen in town, we would get an alert, emergency alert on our computer screen, and a scrawl would come across the bottom. And it would say something like, you know, the 7-Eleven a mile east of campus was held up. Young black male in a hoodie sweatshirt is the suspect. And my guys would tell me at that point that they would just go to their dorm rooms, they would lock the door, and they just wouldn't come out for the rest of the day. And it blew me away. Because again, I'm thinking that if it were me, if it was a description that fit me, you know, middle-aged, slightly overweight soccer coach named Mike is the suspect, I would still go about my day because I knew it wasn't me. I knew it, and so I was amazed that they would respond that way, but they just thought it was easier in that way. And so again, you know, these are things that we started to realize, like, we have an opportunity here then to educate and to spread a positive message and to try and solve a problem in our own mind with some positive energy. And so we created what we call the hashtag One Valpo campaign. And it was just a simple, you know, really just a very simple Instagram or different social media tools where we take pictures of ourselves, different colors all blended together, iconic places around campus or in town. And they'd always say Valparaiso somewhere on their shirt. And we just would share it. That was it. Really simple. It was just these images of us together in town saying, hey, here we are. We represent you too. We would use the tagline, we've come a long way to be your hometown team. And it was kind of just a fun way for us to kind of get out and show and stand together and just show how proud we are of where we are. And that we're here together representing all these different people.
Yeah, I'm curious, you know, off air, we talked a little bit about how this diversity became a strength for your team. And the linchpin of that was the vulnerability of players being willing to share some of those stories that, as you mentioned, you hadn't heard before. I wonder if you could just talk a little bit about just how that affected your team as they began to be a little bit more vulnerable with their own stories with you and with each other.
Yeah, I think it's such a critical piece is that we are willing to dig in with each other and really go deeper than normal, right? You know, one of the things, it was always my favorite day of coaching there was that the very first day of the season, you would stand in this locker room and you would look around the room and there would be a guy from France next to a guy from Germany, next to a guy from Kingston, Jamaica, next to a kid from Chesterton, Indiana, next to a kid from California, Texas. You just go right around the room, really right around the world, right? And you think in your head, how in the world are we going to bring this group together? Really the most fun challenge possible in coaching is how are we going to get this thing to work? Because it doesn't look like it should, right? You know, again, the world would tell us that that locker room doesn't work, right? And I'm telling you now that not only does it work, but it was our greatest strength. And what it did, it came from us being willing to go deeper than normal. You know, so we would start from the supposition that we have more in common than we have different. That's where we're starting. We're all sitting here right now today. We all play soccer for Valparaiso University. This is where we're starting from, right? We're not going to focus on the differences. We're going to focus on what we have in common. And we're just going to build relationships from there. And then, you know, taking the time to get across the room to someone that you don't know quite so well. I'd ask the guys that all the time. So listen, it would be ridiculous to me that we go through 3 months of a season or 4 months of a season, and there's a player that's your teammate that's sitting 50 feet from you across the locker room, and you don't know where they're from, how many brothers and sisters they have, what their parents do for a living, what their goals are. You know what I mean? Like, these are the kinds of things that people need to learn from each other. And when our team, when you start to find those stories and dig into those stories, a lot of our kids came from very, very difficult backgrounds. You know, in our locker room at one point, we had about 13 guys out of 30 who did not know or did not have a relationship with their father. It's incredible, right? But that's the world that we live in some ways, right? And so then being willing for these guys to stand up in front of their teammates and talk about how that impacts them, how that affects them. That's a really hard thing for them to do. They've got to show some real strength by being vulnerable and some courage to be vulnerable. But once they do, it's game changing for the team. Game changing.
Mike, what are some of the things that you would do to really kind of facilitate those conversations? Was there certain traditions or activities or things that you kind of did on a yearly basis to kind of encourage that? Because they don't just always happen naturally, as you alluded to.
Yeah, we did. We certainly had some traditions and some things that we took with us from year to year. Some of them fun. You know, we would have a end of the preseason dance contest with the volleyball team. My wife was the head volleyball coach at the university. Our team, her team, would all get together at a big party at my house, and they would do a little bit of a dance off, which again showed off cultural things. It was just fun, right? It was just an opportunity to get outside of the norm and just spend time together and laugh together and grow together. But we also had our core values. We had 11 principles that we would call our starting 11. So every single day in preseason for the first 11 days, we would have an older player and a new player mixed in together, two or three guys together, and they would share with the team 1 point, and that would give me a chance to bring to loop in on the back end and talk about what it means to me as well, and then really give them an opportunity to be in front of each other and just share. So our first 11 days of the season always started with our starting 11, right? And so that gave them maybe some comfort and experience of standing in front of each other and just talking. It was in some ways scripted because it was what I was giving them, but it got them talking, right? And I think probably the most important thing was my willingness. And this took me a long time. Look, I'm 51 years old. It took me a long time to get to a point where I would be willing to stand in front of them and share some of my own history, some of my own past. I've come to this realization that I'm not defined by my past. Right. I'm informed by it and I've learned from it, but I'm not defined by it. And so knowing that gives me strength and courage to stand up and share things about each other. We all have a history and a story and a past. Maybe the dates and the names and the faces and the places have changed, but we all have a story. And so when we're willing to share that, we get to know each other deeper. As we know each other deeper, relationships are stronger. When relationships are stronger, our team becomes almost unbreakable. Right. We would say, you know, as we headed out, like our family against your team, I like my chances in that one. And so that was kind of our way that we would approach it. You know, the closer we can get together, these bonds. And look, at the end of the day, what really matters in sports anyways are these relationships that we're building. These are friends that you're going to have for a lifetime.
Now, your journey here didn't end with one Valpo. And actually, you took this up even to another level, and it's impacted your whole community, right?
Yeah, we was really proud and really surprising in many ways to me, because it was a grassroots kind of campaign that was all built right off of my phone. And I'm not the most technological savvy individual, right? And so we would just take pictures of each other and share them around. And as we got people engaged, I wanted to find out how we can draw them in even deeper, right? How we can get more commitment out of these folks that are following along. And so I started to do some research, and I ran across a video that was offered at San Diego State University to their incoming freshman students. And it was a diversity pledge. It was just a promise to show respect to other folks. So I called their school and I said, I love the idea of this video. Could I take some of it and borrow some of the ideas? And they said, of course, go ahead. And then I went on our own campus website and I looked at how, as a university, we define diversity. And I didn't want it to be just about soccer, and I didn't want it to be just about color. And so, those are, you know, the color is maybe the most obvious thing, but not just that. And so we wrote up what we called the One Valpo Promise. And it was just a really, grown up golden rule that just says, I promise to show respect to all others, regardless of, and then list all of these different things that we're talking about. And then we would ask people to sign, and then we'd ask them to take a picture of them signing it and share that picture through our social media sites. And then just, again, spreading a positive message to folks. And so we did that for a couple of years, and it was probably over this time of 2 or 3 years, I probably did 200 or 300 talks, you know, gave me an opportunity to get in front of people, to bring my players with me in front of people, and to have them share different stories and really engage with our community. It changed the entire vernacular of our campus. I mean, One Valpo is tried and true part of the university's lexicon now. People talk about it all the time, every day, in a lot of different ways. So it's changed everything. Other universities have taken this campaign and started their own. So it's been a model for other folks as well. And so I'm really proud of that. In the last few years, I've been able now to get out and take the same conversation and maybe twist it a little bit. And so now what I'm doing is talking to people about, why does that work in that locker room setting? And then how does it scale outside of the locker room? So we talk more about community building based off of the same principles. When I tell you that made our locker room stronger, tighter, it was our greatest strength, the fact that we embraced who we were. Our diversity. I want to know, how does that work in a school? How does that work in a town and a company and an organization? How would that work in a country? Because, you know, when I watch the news today, this is certainly things that we need to be talking about.
Mike, I'm curious, you know, most of our audience is coaches at the high school level, some at the college level. And, you know, in your story, there was an event, you know, there was a turning point where you had to talk about it because it had such an impact, you know, in the middle of that game, in the middle of your locker room. It's like a grenade going off that somebody else tossed into the mix of your team.
Sure.
And I think sometimes with coaches, diversity can be a bit of a scary subject. It can be scary to wade into those waters when you're not forced into it by an event that in some ways brings your team together and now almost gives you an excuse to really engage with it. I don't know if you would have you know, suggestions for coaches is how do you start that conversation before it started for you, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's interesting too, because I've been at it for a while now. I mean, we're talking about this incident happening maybe in 2012 or 13, I think. Right. So now players that were on the team in 2020 weren't there when it happened. Right. So they've come into this environment where this is kind of who we are. They knew about it from the recruiting process, and we're out there and we're sharing this all the time with people, because, again, we start attracting folks to us that are interested in this kind of environment. But they weren't there. Right. And so, again, I think what we have to be willing to do is, you know, whether it's with tact or care or concern, but we have to be willing to dig in and ask questions, right? And I think, you know, for most of the time, the person answering the question isn't really offended by the question. In fact, I find that they're quite happy to talk about it. You know, if you're doing it in a way that you're in an environment that's safe, you're in an environment that's comforting and nurturing, but it's compassion and kindness are kind of the rules of the environment, you can talk about anything you want in there, and you should. You know, my favorite time in coaching is really those times on these long bus trips where you're listening sometimes to the conversations that are going on behind you. And it's really, really fun to listen to them talk about things and, you know, their own, they're becoming these people that they're going to become as adults through this experience, and just listening to them hash out different things. You know, this is what has to be part of your team. And I think you've got to set time aside for it. We would go on the road and we would go to dinner, and I would schedule 2 or 3 hours for every meal. Every time. No phones allowed. They can't, you know, you're going to sit there and we're going to talk to each other, right? And in these informal environments where everybody's laughing and everybody's sharing and everybody, you know what I mean? These are the times where I think teams really grow together.
Now, Mike, as we get ready to wrap up here with this episode, I know when you take this talk on the road and you do this with a lot of different organizations, you kind of bring it home with a message at the end. And I wonder if you could just kind of share that with our listeners here today as we close kind of this great conversation and this amazing story that you've shared with us here today.
Sure. Yeah. I think, you know, when we talk about diversity, I think we think we're talking about a challenge that we have to manage. Right. And what I'm saying to folks is that our diversity is our greatest strength. Right. We all have unique gifts and characteristics and traits and strengths. And if I'm not getting the most of you and you're not getting the most of me as a group, we can't be the most that we're supposed to be. We've got to have comfort to be able to bring all these things out. And for that to happen, I think what has to happen is that we have to be willing to share our stories with each other. I have to be willing to share my story with you. And then I have to be willing to share in your story without judging you for it. And these are tricky things. We live in an Instagram age where there's constant comparison, and we don't measure up. And the easy response is just to judge people about things. We have to assume that people are going through something amazing and that they're doing something amazing, because the energy that comes with that kind of kindness is really, again, it's game changing for your team. It changes the whole trajectory of what you're doing. And as I said before, you know, sports really, you know, whether we win or lose, we're going to forget that stuff, but we're going to remember these relationships forever. And that's really the lesson kind of throughout the whole thing, is that these relationships are what really matter. And the deeper we go, the better we get, the better our team becomes.
Now that's it for our conversation with Mike. Really appreciate him coming on. You can follow him on Twitter at Coach Mike Avery. His website is just going live this week, and it's centercirclein.com. He is a validated Equilibria presenter. He is out there speaking, making a difference in the world of sports, and you definitely need to check him out. Lastly, just a reminder, If you didn't catch at the beginning, to register for the webinars we are offering this week. I am offering a webinar on to improve team culture by embracing and leveraging diverse personalities. You need to register as soon as you possibly can because there's very limited spots. The other webinar we are offering through Equilibrium Sports is with Lynn Ketchmerick, the vice president. And that is Thursday, April 9th. She's offering two sessions. You can register now. The links will be in the episode details of this podcast. Don't miss out on those opportunities.